Penguin Random House Audio presents Our Lady of Perpetual Hunger, a memoir. This is the author, Lisa Donovan. For John, my champion. She was an American girl, raised on promises. From American Girl, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Chapter 1. Buoyancy. Fruit. I had the kind of mango between my fingers that you really have to suck on before you can even start to bite the sinewy flesh. Otherwise, you risk losing all its juices down the length of your arm and occasionally clear into your armpit, depending on your position at the time. In the South, we call this a trash can fruit, usually a peach, because at a certain time of the year they are so perfectly and impossibly ripe, almost gnarly in their fecundity, that you have to stand over a trash can to eat them. But I wasn't in the South. Not my South, anyway. I was sitting in the passenger seat of an old pickup truck in Costa Rica, letting the juices flow. I had a warm beer between my knees and my bare, dirty feet firmly propped up on the sun-bleached red, now pink vinyl dashboard, as if they had been there my entire life. I bounced up the side of a mountain staring at my long toes, which landed somewhere between elegantly Romanesque and boyishly ugly. Their feet that I usually didn't take the time to look at, much less admire. They took a different shape that day with the dark volcanic beach sand still between my toes and their arches just a bit more pronounced for some reason. She startled me, the woman I had become. The woman I hadn't paid attention to for so many years between the baby raising and the decades of standing on those strong feet in a kitchen and the fast adaptability to make it all work. With her lean legs, her high-arched feet, her sticky mango-covered hands, and the way she took big, satisfying swigs from a body temperature beer. She didn't even like beer. She also never felt this kind of distilled sense of being beautiful, not in her real life. She was always the smart one, the interesting one, the one who could crack a joke to make all the boys blush and bust out into a holy shit, who said that kind of laughter. But she learned long ago that she would not float through this world on her beauty. Yet there she was, there I was, a beautiful, pretty even girl in a tattered sundress with little rosebud lips, dark olive skin, and good strong eyes that scared me a little when I caught myself in the side mirror. I was far away from the story of myself, a steep uphill climb with a baby on my hip, and then two, and an early onset high expectation for my life that I was not willing to forsake. I worked for a career that I loved, one in which I was celebrated and one where I did work that made me proud. I followed a path that became clear only as I placed one foot in front of the other and said yes, very often with unknown outcomes. I can take credit for paying attention, working hard, and knowing the values I wanted to honor. I've come equipped with a kind of compass, one that is utterly mysterious in its origin but always overrides fear and doubt and is thankfully nearly always accurate and persistent as fuck. And with it, I found a home in my work. I found beauty there. I found moments that defined something about my life, something about what I knew I needed as a human to move forward, while still being present and useful in the moment. A lot of those moments happened standing behind a prep table, next to an oven, with spatula in hand. In the morning, there is a quiet light and an almost ethereal hum in a restaurant kitchen. This moment is one of the pastry chef's many rewards. Unlocking the door, the first one in after a night of clatter and shouting, whispered cursing, eye-rolling, loud laughing, sweating, slamming, and pounding, the after-effect leaves a crisp silence. A silence that might be alarming if I didn't know it was all going to be over sooner than I was ready for. It's a kind of post-apocalyptic silence, after the fallout, but just before the zombies show up. There are hardly ever windows in these kitchens. The glow and hum do not come from anything celestial or planetary, but from the equipment. The low boys creak and buzz, keeping all the leftover mise en place cool in their quart containers with their perfectly cut blue tape labels on their collars, looking like little schoolboys standing at attention with their perfectly pressed lapels. The soft serve machine aches because it is never used properly and is grossly mistreated throughout the night. The dishwashing machine taps at random moments, waiting to be turned on, waiting to be ridden hard for 17 hours straight like the monster that it is. And the elephant of the walk-in cooler makes a noise so deep and constant that it doesn't register until one day it breaks down, revealing itself as the audible baseline of the whole kitchen, the tail end of a Buddhist prayer bell that grounds everyone, that serves as the key of collective energy for the entirety of a space. I would take my time in those early moments. I never rushed it. Those mornings fell between my life as the mother of two young kids, as the wife of a really good human who needs conversation much more than I ever do, and as the head of my own department with three cooks under me who were all novices at pastry. There was also the occasional cook from the line who was being punished. The line is where service is executed, where all the action happens every night. Pastry was sometimes treated like the cargo hold of an airplane, for the storage of things that were not useful or for people who were doing penance for lack of preparation and general fuck-off behavior. My already weak managerial skills pressed to the max. So those small moments to make coffee, to write prep lists, to gather my thoughts, to try to fit my heart back into the equation, became more essential to me than sleep or water. It became my ritual, my morning prayer. Tea and oranges that come all the way from China lulled Leonard Cohen as I tasted my bitter coffee, black with no cream, no sugar, just dark and hot and strong and pushing my eyelids higher with each sip. When my career was at what most considered its pinnacle, those early morning moments became necessary. I would thumb through recipes that I had spent the last decade writing and developing. I would try to make time to look through at least one beautiful book by someone I loved and admired. I would play with fruit for as long as I could. After all the checklists were checked, deliveries were signed for, orders were placed, and schedules were written, fruit was the first thing I would touch. Prepping and trimming and snacking while I had my coffee gave me a quiet moment and a memory recall that I needed. The methodical pace of tending to a few flats of strawberries or peaches or damson plums, my favorite of all the fruits, became the only time I still felt like a cook in my day-to-day life. A good piece of fruit, or several hundred good pieces of fruit, could inspire me to make a cold, frozen honey parfait so light, and so nearly something that felt just like honey air on your tongue, that it did not disrupt the fruit's pure ripeness. Or I'd rework my favorite pâte à sucre to have a beefiness that might carry the sometimes off-putting taste of a pawpaw, and experiment until learning that buckwheat or a toasted chestnut flour rounds out nicely that nearly mineral taste that those unusual and sometimes curiously disgusting fruits have. Fruit is titillating, little pockets of juicy potential, full of an almost sexual promise of pleasure. It could make me change my mind and better my plans. The winter I first processed a few hundred pounds of apples, I spent the whole time dreaming about what they might become, my hands working faster and more efficiently with each step, peeling and coring and dicing and settling the pieces into an ice-cold lemon water bath, feeling a kind of calmness, knowing I was in the right place, doing the right work. Those meditations sealed my fate as a pastry chef. Those moments became the ones I looked for when I found myself in a job that seemingly had very little to do with them. My refusal to do work that felt empty, coupled with my intense work ethic, created a beautiful collision of opportunities. It allowed me to drink bottles of wine with my heroes until the morning light, cook in kitchens with people I never dreamed of having the privilege to know, and it allowed me to continue to learn and to work, the only two things I really ever wanted in the first place. And I was good, that I know. My food is good. I'm not reinventing anything. I'm not competing to be the best. My food is thoughtful and hopefully comforting, and that's what always mattered to me. It's intentional. In fact, my food is likely the sincerest intention of my many sincere intentions. After all these years, I think it may damn well be the very best of me. Something as simple as baking can save you. It saved me again and again. There were moments of discovery when my hands were working pie dough, moments of grace and patience found in the learning, moments of perseverance in a cast iron cornbread, moments of focus and intelligence and confidence in my research and recipe writing.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?